Go ahead and get started whenever. Can people hear me? I hear an echo, so. All right. My name is Mark Stafford. This session is primarily about OData. The title says use OData to get more from Office and Power BI. And we will be looking at how OData fits into that picture, but more holistically, we're going to be looking at why Microsoft is investing in OData, like what platforms at Microsoft are investing in OData, and just kind of how it fits in and how you guys can integrate your applications with the Microsoft stack and with each other using OData. So very, very high level picture, but we are going to get very much down in the details. The PM role at Microsoft spans a lot of ground. There are PMs who are very focused on kind of UX type stuff. There are PMs who are extremely technical, and I'm more towards the latter end. So the OData protocol by nature is a very, very geeky thing, and working on it, you get to be down in the weeds. So please feel free to interrupt me with questions. If we get off on a tangent, it's not that big of a deal. We've got a deck to get us back on track. And realistically, this session is here for you guys, not for me. So if you have questions, please feel free to raise them. Also, my email address is at the end of the deck. You do have to stay until the end of the talk to get that. But I would welcome you to reach out to me if you have questions. So, let's get started, hopefully, if the slide deck would go in the right direction. So currently, I'm actually based out of China, so I'm also, in addition to everything else going on, fighting jet lag and trying to strike the appropriate balance of caffeine and everything else to keep me running through this demo. But the OData team is based in China right now. We work closely with a lot of the Power BI team out there and a number of other parts of the organization, but I just thought you might enjoy seeing a picture of somewhere else. Looks actually a lot like Vegas. So what are we going to spend time on today? So first thing that we're going to spend time on is looking at OData overall. Realistically, we're probably going to spend more than 10 minutes here, but I had to make the pieces fit. Looking at getting data out of Power BI in other parts of Office, we're going to spend 20 minutes talking about that. Looking at getting data into it, we're going to talk about that for 15 minutes. And then just kind of putting it all together and figuring out what cool things we can do, we're going to spend another 20 minutes on. Things that we aren't going to spend time on, though, we are not going to spend time on OData services at Microsoft outside of the scope of this conference. So there are many, many, many OData services at Microsoft, and I want you to be aware of them, like Azure Active Directory and Azure Table Storage and Dynamics and so on and so forth, but this conference is SharePoint Conf and mostly focused on Office. So we're going to talk about those OData services and how to integrate with them. We're not going to do a super deep dive on REST, although this is the developer track. We just don't have time. Like, I can talk about this. I honestly have a two-hour version of this talk that I give that would be fun. But we're not going to do a super deep dive on OData. We'll look at some of the details, but I'm happy to drill in if you want me to. And we're not going to look at what's new in OData V4. The Exchange OData service, which we're going to talk about, is a V4 service. But as far as what's new in it, while an interesting topic, it's outside of the scope of this talk. So answering kind of the most important question, like, what is so special about OData? Why would we care at all? So I do want to give you one sales pitch. I am a PM. It does only have 3 points, so hopefully you can take these away. And if you remember anything at all from my talk today, I would ask you, please remember this particular slide. And hopefully the slides are downloadable as well. But this is my OData sales pitch. So number one, it's a standardized format with a custom feel. So you can feel like you're writing a real REST service that looks and feels like everybody else's custom JSON APIs and has nice URLs and has a very standard way of working with it. But it's a standardized format, which means that there's already a number of stacks that work with it. You can do code generation so that you can get clients up and running fast. And most importantly, you're not going to argue about URL structure. You're not going to argue about whether put or post or patch is the right verb to use, right? So all these conventions that have yet to be defined and are not defined inside of REST, are defined inside of O data, and we've made a bunch of decisions for you. That leads to reduced cost for design and development. You're not going to have a bunch of architects in a room talking about what the right way is to design your service. There are minutiae that you still have to deal with, like how do you version your service, and questions like that. And most importantly, there's a broad reach with the existing ecosystem. So we currently have clients for .NET, JavaScript, C++, Java, and we're looking at adding other clients as well. And we expect that those clients will run on all mobile platforms, et cetera, et cetera. What does OData enable? So with that sales pitch, we kind of lead into what we get from OData. So the first thing that we get is some conventions. OData, like the best way to think about it is REST plus some additional conventions built on top. So REST is a good solid foundation, right? But it doesn't say anything about how to structure your URLs. It doesn't say much about how to serialize your payloads. And so OData is going to add those additional conventions to you. When you get those conventions, you have less ramp-up time. I can walk up to any OData service in the world and have a very strong probability of being able to issue functional queries against it without reading any documentation. As long as I have a basic understanding of the model, which will always require documentation, the conventions are the same across all OData services. Interoperability, all these things talk to each other. There are versions of OData, but versions 1 through 3 were kind of backwards compatible. Version 4 is different. That's a conversation I'd rather have offline, but because it went through the public standardization process and it went through OASIS, they made some fundamental breaking changes. And so it's harder to have a V1 to V4 OData service than it is to have a V1 to V3 OData service. And then last but not least, data virtualization is kind of a key word. I always struggle with understanding what data virtualization means, but I think of it as solving that problem of people emailing spreadsheets to each other. So when they email a spreadsheet and they're having that all-out email war about who has the most updated copy of the spreadsheet, if you have data virtualization and they can just click the refresh button in the Excel spreadsheet, then you don't have to have that war, right? So the query runs all the way back to the server, wherever it is, and pulls down a refresh set of data. And Matt Mason, if you guys were just in his talk about Power BI, has talked about how Power Query can actually fold queries. So it can take subsequent steps from an OData base, and it can actually make those things smarter. We'll drill in on this in detail in a little bit. So what is the OData sweet spot? If you have an API and you need to do ad hoc query, OData is probably perfect for you. If you don't need to do ad hoc query and you only have a couple of operations, well, you can probably choose any one of a number of technologies, right? OData is not going to give you a big advantage. It works best with structured data. Doesn't have to be schematized, so you don't have to be working off a SQL server, but it does need to be structured. You can't very effectively query things that aren't structured. And if you have interoperability requirements, either because you work with the government or something else, then OData is a great fit. So OData is both a public standard, and everything that we are working on is open source. Let me qualify that. Everything that the OData team is working on is open source. Obviously, SharePoint and Exchange and people who are exposing OData services are not open source, but the stacks that allow them to expose OData heads are open source. So how does OData help Office of Power BI? That's what we're going to find out. But we can get data out into custom applications. We can get data in either from other corporate data sources or places like that. We can actually write apps against Exchange and SharePoint and Project. And then finally, we can actually ramp up faster, and so we can spend our time innovating rather than recreating documentation and understanding how to do various APIs. So let's dig into OData. So OData has kind of three sets of main conventions. There are some well-known endpoints. Any REST service is going to have an entry point. So you have to be able to walk up to the entry point of the REST service, and theoretically there's this hypermedia client that can walk the rest of the service and figure things out from there. For us, that thing is called the service route, and you'll hear me refer to it several times. We also expose a data model at serviceroute/$metadata. This is extremely useful for code gen, which we'll see. And finally, there's a public endpoint for batch requests. So you can do multiple creates at a time. You can mix and match creates and updates and deletes and all sorts of things. I think the most valuable part of OData is the fact that we have these query conventions, and we're going to drill into those in detail in just a second, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about them. And then we have payload conventions. I'm largely going to skip over this and just say, hey, look, JSON is the best format currently. We do support AtomPub still, but JSON is by far the best thing. And the really cool part about conventions is that it enables you to remove a bunch of stuff from your payload. So if you know how to compose URLs, and your URLs are very predictable, it means that you can remove all that stuff from your payload, resulting in a very compact payload, but the client can recreate it because it knows what those URLs should look like. So you don't have any loss of data, but you have a much smaller payload overall. So service document is largely uninteresting. It kind of advertises the top level things that you can go look at. And this happens to be from my fictional service, Supons. So if things don't work out for me at Microsoft, I plan to start a ripoff of Groupon that is going to sell hot soup online. And so I have Supons and users that I can go browse. In addition, in OData V4, you can advertise other top-level things. You can advertise things like singletons. So if you're familiar with SharePoint's CSOM, like everything in SharePoint starts from web, right? You go web.sites, and then you kind of navigate down from there. And that web, that single entity, is the most important thing from them, so they would call that a singleton. If you have one most important thing, like a root of a file structure or something like that, then you can expose that at the root of your OData service now. Similarly, you can have functions and actions up here that do non-CRUD type things. So what you see here enable CRUD type things. I can create, I can read, I can delete Supons. If you want to do something like rent a movie or check out with a shopping cart or something like that, those aren't CRUD functionality, so you can actually expose functions as well. Dollar metadata just describes what the model looks like. This is typically for machine consumption, not for human consumption, right? Allows code gen. And then URL conventions. Okay, so here's where it gets interesting. I'm going to throw this slide up, and then we're actually going to go do this in the browser. So there's three main parts to an OData URL. There's the service route, and hopefully you guys can read that. Beyond the service route, there's two things. There's the path, which identifies a resource, and the query string, which narrows down the resource that's been identified. So what can go into a path? Well, at the top level, we can have an entity set or a collection of things, and you can actually get to a collection of things in multiple places. Whenever you have a collection, that can be followed by a key segment, so that identifies one particular member of the collection. And then you can have some navigation segments, and maybe those navigation segments lead back to another entity set or collection. Like if we went back to orders or something like that, then you can have another key segment and so on and so forth. And you can imagine how you can build up a pretty complex URL by navigating through these things. One other thing that you can have are typecasts. So if you want just employees that are managers or something like that, then you can filter those things down. And then the query string allows you to do all sorts of different operations on entity sets. So let's go take a look at an actual OData service. And don't tell anybody I'm using Chrome. Okay, so we're gonna actually go look at a service in Chrome. And I'm gonna blow that up a little bit so that you can see it. This is just a very simple example, right? The reason I'm using Chrome is because it has a nice JSON view plugin that you can use to look at JSON payloads. There's nothing magic about it. It will work in IE. It's just that IE doesn't know what to do with JSON. Okay, so a typical JSON payload that you're going to get back is going to consist of two things. There will always be a metadata URL that tells you what's actually here, and then there will be a value. Sometimes that value is going to look a little bit different. In this particular case, it's an array of things, right? So it's a collection of users that you're getting back. So let's look at path type stuff first. So if I want to get a single user back, I can add a path segment to this. So I'm going to say Hao Chen. Okay, so I got a particular user back. And then I can append navigation segments to that. So I'm going to say who referred this person. Now notice that referred by doesn't even show up here, right? Like, you can't even tell from this particular payload that referred by is there. I happen to know that it is because I know the model really well. There is a way to force everything to show up, but if you know what the URL conventions are, you know that this thing exists. So let me show the referred by, and then we'll kind of go back and look at how to see everything. So there are three flavors of the JSON format based on different needs, right? So there's a flavor called no metadata, where you won't even get the metadata URL. If you ask for no metadata, we expect that the client is smart enough to understand what's going on and deal with it accordingly, right? So you know what you asked for, you know how to deal with it. If you ask for minimal metadata, which is the default, or if you just ask for application JSON, you'll get minimal metadata. That means that you get the metadata link, and you get clarifications wherever something is a subtype and you should need to know about it. So if you have a collection of employees, and then you've got direct reports on those employees, and the employees are a mixture of managers and employees, then you would have a type annotation on certain elements that say, hey, this person's a manager or this person's just an employee. And then full metadata is for clients that just, they don't want to be able to compute the links or it's too compute intensive, so mobile clients maybe are willing to trade off compute for network or vice versa. If you don't want to compute the links or you can't compute the links, then you can ask for full metadata and it will give you everything. So here we can actually see referred by as well. So I'm just going to go back to default. And we'll tack on a few more navigation segments here. I think I have got the wrong person. I think I wanted to start with Junhao. Okay, so you can keep tacking on referred by. We didn't see a change when I just issued that query, but I actually got a 204 back. A 204 means like no content, right? Like I couldn't find what was going on. Very similar to a 404, except for it's marginally different. and then we can drill in. You can see a billing address here. So we can drill into the billing address. And then we can drill into the city. Right. And so the path just allows you to navigate to a resource. Now, if the resource that you've navigated to is a collection, like Supons, then you may want to be able to filter that path, right, and get back just certain things. So you can say all sorts of stuff. So let's, can you guys see where my scroll bar is here? And like it's only 5% of the height of this thing. So there's all sorts of standardized query options that we can feed this. We can say $top equals 5, right, and we get back fewer resources. We can say $filter equals name not equal to this. Right, so we lost that result now. We can say order by, $order by equals name. Right, there's all sorts of stuff that we can do, and because these query operations are standardized, again, generic platforms can work with them. So let's take a look at, there's a reason that my email is running, by the way. It's the first presentation I've ever been in where I needed my email running. We'll get there. Okay, so let's look at some of the query options that we can use. Dollar filter, I'm going to kind of fly through this stuff and hope that you guys can download the slides later to dig in a little bit more. So dollar filter, we can do just a simple property match. This is just going to be you're picking one property and doing something. With that property, you can do logical operators. So you can do equals, not equals, greater than or equal, less than or equal, and or not. Right? The and or not are really interesting because now you can come up with something that's not a simple property match. You can do arithmetic operators like add, subtract. You can do string functions, right? And you can do other functions as well. You can get the year out of a date. As of OWW3, you can also do any all queries. So I can say, hey, give me back soupons where any of their ingredients contains garlic or bacon. And you can do compound conditions. And these can be arbitrarily complex up to the limitations of whatever it is that you're issuing the query from. So if that's a browser, most browsers do eventually impose a URL restriction. They happen to be so large that this is rarely a limitation that affects people. But in this particular case, we're looking for users who were last seen in 2012 and who have favorited gazpacho and have at least two favorite tags. We can do similar stuff with ordering, so we can order by a simple property. We can do more advanced ordering. This particular query is interesting, and let me explain why it's interesting. In this query, what you get back are users, but you're ordering by a field that is not actually returned. And so the ordering would actually appear to be arbitrary, but there may be reasons for doing this, right? So you could imagine filtering on something that's not actually returned inside the payload. Ordering is probably a little bit more of a stretch. And of course, you can do multiple field ordering, and you can do descending, and you can add in some of those functions that we saw before. So in this particular case, we're ordering first by the year they were last seen descending, and then by the month they were last seen descending. Does that make sense? Everybody with me so far? Any questions? All right. So top and skip allow client-side paging. So if you want to get back 10 resources at a time, you can say top equals 10, skip equals 0, and then top equals 10, skip equals 10, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There is one other kind of paging that you should know about. It's called server-side paging. It looks different. You get a next link back in the payload, and the client's expected to understand how to use that next link. So the next link is a big fancy word called an opaque token. Opaque token just means there's no guarantees about structure, right? So you're not supposed to try to encode anything into it or predict what a different next link might be. But server-driven paging allows a server to say, hey, look, you can only request 50 records at a time. I'm not going to allow you to request the full 5 billion records in my table. And then select and expand. So select is column filtering, not projections. So all you can do is restrict the columns that you get back. You can't multiply, you can't create new columns, you can't rename columns. You can just restrict the columns that you get back. And with expand, you can choose to include related entities. So you can expand things that are elsewhere in the service. One cool thing that we've added in OWW4, so one of the few things that I'll talk about that's new in OWW4, is we have finally the ability to do fancy things with expanded stuff. So before you couldn't, like when you expanded, you got back everything that was expanded. So if you wanted to pull back a customer and their orders, you couldn't pull back just orders that totaled more than 1,000 or something like that. Now you can do that with OWW4. Similarly, with a graph style query where you may have a user who has friends, in the model that we just looked at, we had a user that was referred by a user, you can expand out to a certain number of levels. And you can use all these things in combination with each other. So payload conventions, let's mostly move through this and see if we can get to some demos. we codify a lot of things, right? Like we give you prescriptive guidance on how to return certain error codes, what formats to use, and nuances like when you should use patch, whether you should use patch versus merge, that type of thing. Let's talk about the JSON format. So the JSON format is the format that's standardized in ODDB4. And even before ODDB4, in ODDB3, we saw it take over really fast. The main reason that we saw it take over really fast is, number one, modern APIs typically use JSON. And number two, it's a lot more compact than XML. It's 90% more compact in an uncompressed payload. It's still 30% more compact even in a compressed payload. And it really does look like a custom API. So this is kind of how it looks. You saw it in the browser as we just did the demo before. So no real surprises there. So kind of looping back, we already covered this, so I'll cover it quickly. But we were able to remove all that stuff from the JSON payload because the service is very predictable, right? So the frameworks can know about those relationships based upon dollar metadata, where we describe the model, and developers get up to speed faster, et cetera, et cetera. And then last slide in this section, some people who are building OData services think that OData is only for building on top of SQL. But I want you to know some other things that OData can do. So OData will work with unschematized information. Now, we said that this wasn't necessarily all that useful, but some services require that it work with unschematized information. So you've got this thing called OpenType, where if you take one of your types and you mark it as open, then you can arbitrarily tack properties onto that. Right. So no schema. This is true of both entity types and complex types, and again, I can explain the difference of those offline. Actions and functions are part of the OData protocol. They allow you to do RPC-style stuff. So we said there are a certain set of things that are great for CRUD, there's a certain set of things that are not great for CRUD. Those things that are not great for CRUD fit into actions and functions typically. So renting a movie, watching a movie, things like that. Choosing first-class extensions for aggregation and temporal. So these are new things in ODDB4. There's actually ways to extend the OData protocol to add stuff like apply. So if I want to sum over a relational database, I can implement the aggregation extension and actually do that. So I can pull back essentially a predefined report. And temporal data allows you to query your data as of a particular point in time. So you can say, hey, I want this information as of 2 months ago. And then last but not least, you can take any OData payload and you can customize it with annotations. So we have a few pictures of this today where, like in the end-to-end from the information catalog, the data catalog, to Power Query client, we actually annotate those payloads so that the experience inside of Power Query is richer. And Power Query lights up with more information that it can present to IWs about a particular data source before they even pick it. This is one example of vocabulary annotations, but ultimately we envision a world where anything that you need to do that doesn't necessarily fit in the data model itself, so it's metadata about the payload, can go into vocabulary annotations. And we hope that we continue to seed the ecosystem with new vocabularies and better examples of using vocabulary annotations. So far, so good. Before we move away from OData, any questions? Not move away from OData, but move into the next section of the talk. Okay, so let's talk about Power BI. What is it? You guys have probably been to Power BI sessions today or yesterday. Is there anybody that doesn't feel like they have a really good grasp of what Power BI is? Okay, a couple. All right. So Power BI is really an ecosystem of products. And I'll just bring this slide up. This is my proof that I work for Microsoft. The obligatory architecture slide. We're not actually going to go through this. I just thought it was kind of funny, and it actually has a few key points on it. So number one, as far as OData is concerned, this data management gateway down in the corner here allows you to point it at any relational database, I know, and automatically create an OData source over it. So it runs on-premise right now. Hopefully, eventually, it will run in the cloud as well. But you can literally point at any database table on-premise and make that an OData feed, which makes it instantly accessible to Power Query, and then you can publish it up into the data catalog and make it easily accessible to your information workers. But that's one member of the Power BI family. There are many other members, including Power Query, Power Map, Power Pivot, the actual catalog that stores all this information. And Power BI as a product is kind of bringing all these things together and making it easy for people to discover and then import data into a place where they can use it. So coming back to what is Power BI, you know, one of the main things in Power BI is Power Query that allows you to get data into Excel. It will read from OData feeds among many, many other sources that it can pull from. But if you have a corporate data source that's not running one of the approved data sources from Power Query, an easy way to get your data into Power Query is to expose an OData service over the top of it. Power Pivot allows you to do more with the model. Power View and Power Map are interesting visualization tools. You can use Power BI Sites. So there's been a couple of talks about the Power BI Sites, but this is where an IT administrator can go in and control access to certain things in the Power BI ecosystem. And one of the coolest demos that they do right now is the Q&A demo, where you can actually do kind of a natural language question, and it will generate a chart for you. So if you don't know about Power BI, I would highly encourage you to watch some of the recordings on Power BI Talks. There's people who are far more qualified than I am to talk about the Power BI ecosystem, but I am able to answer a lot of questions, so if you want to come up and talk to me about it afterwards, I'd be happy to. All right, so I'm skipping through that. So Data Management Gateway, that's what we talked about before. So you can point and click to create OData services from SQL Server, from Oracle, and from other data sources. And it's a very, very easy way to get data into Power BI. So just looking at a demo, I'm going to show you the end result first, because I think the guy who set this demo up for me tweaked the environment, and it's likely to demo fail on me in just a minute here, which is a great way to start with the real demos. So you can see over here that I've actually searched for and imported a product set. I did that through Power BI, which we'll look at in just a minute, but I was able to just kind of hover over this and actually bring it into the worksheet. So you can bring it into the worksheet, and then you can do whatever you want to with it, and it's refreshable all the way back to the data source, which in this particular case is a SQL Server sitting under somebody's desk in Redmond. So what he did is he took this SQL Server table, he pointed to it with Data Management Gateway, and he said, hey, create an OData feed for me, please. Data Management Gateway promptly did that. He published it into the catalog, and then it was searchable through Power BI. So we will try to see if this works still. But if it doesn't, at least you've seen the end result. So we go to Power Query. And I think we need to sign in here. Now we'll do an online search. We'll at least be able to search still. So this is the result that he was able to publish. If you go look at it, you can see that there's kind of a URL to the OData source there. And we'll go ahead and try and bring that in. Success. Let's do it one more time with Fiddler just so that you can see the OData query. Still bringing the data in. So these are just simple OData queries that are happening here. If we look at the response, maybe one that's not a redirect, we can see that the response is from an OData service, and we're getting the JSON format back, which is what Power Query asks for by default. Now, one of the cool things about Power Query is that it will do query folding. So let's take a look at that. I'm going to start a new tab here. And rather than going out and querying, I'm actually going to bring something in from an OData source directly. This demo was supposed to be done later. We'll do it now, though. So if you guys haven't seen Northwind in a while, now is your chance. So all we're going to do, we have a series of public data sources out there, like kind of reference OData feeds. We're working on better reference OData feeds. But for right now, we've got Northwind. And so literally, all I'm going to do is go out and look for customers. Right? And with customers, I can do all sorts of things. Right? I can choose to order things. You can see that my sort showed up over here. I can choose to filter things. So I'm going to say text filters begins with R. And then hopefully, if this works properly, we'll run this query. And we will see that the query that was actually built I should have had my Zoom utility running, but I don't right now. So I will just blow up the font here. Maybe. That's not helpful. Control num plus. Well, hopefully people can read that. So we actually folded the query. So it took those three steps. It took the ordering and the filtering and the customer set, and it actually kind of built one big OData URL. Now, the clear advantage to this is that we transferred six rows. Right? So if we go back and look at the query, we transferred six rows as opposed to all the customers in Northwind and then filter them client-side. And if you've got a much bigger table than the customers table in Northwind, then this becomes very, very valuable. Okay, so let's talk about SharePoint. So SharePoint has been doing OData for a number of years now. SharePoint 2010 had OData in it. They exposed all their list data, which is arguably one of the most valuable features of SharePoint. SharePoint 2013 exposes a lot more stuff with OData, and all this stuff is read-write compatible. So you can create new things, you can pull things, you can modify things. One nuance to SharePoint is that their OData feed is really well authenticated, as it should be, of course, right? But because authentication makes it harder to do demos, I'm going to say that SharePoint works best with CSOM, and we'll take a look at it in the browser, but there's not a lot of real functional demos that I can do. So let's go look at it in the browser, though. So if you go to any SharePoint site and just tack onto the end __API/, this is SharePoint 2013, you get a 404 not found. I don't know why they don't expose the service document. I need to ask somebody that. But there actually is an OData service here, and I can prove that by going to $metadata. Right? And $metadata returns my model. And then that single web that you want to get back from SharePoint, you can get to by just going to /web. And from there, of course, this is the Atom format, by the way. From there, of course, you can navigate to any one of the other areas that the SharePoint OData feed has available to it. All the normal OData stuff works with it. The only reason that it doesn't work all that well for a demo is because of OAuth and the way that the OAuth authentication workflow works. But works just like any other OData service. Let's talk about Exchange. So if you have not heard yet, I am incredibly excited to announce that Exchange is introducing an OData feed. They have had SOAP web services for the past decade, and they recently decided to expose OData services over at least mail and calendar items, with hopefully more to come. So right now, literally, what's available up on Office 365 is mail, calendar, contacts, with hopefully more to come. Oh, and the second note there, this is the first major product in the world to publicly support OData V4. And I wrote that actually before I talked to SAP. I talked to SAP earlier today. Their NetWeaver gateway is apparently also supporting OData V4. So we'll say first major Microsoft product to publicly support OData V4. All right, so let's take a look at OData from Exchange. I need to flip over to my demo machine. Okay, so we are going to just look at a very simple JavaScript file that's going to just load some emails for me if I unblock it. And we'll look at the code in just a second here. All right, so really, really simple app. All it does right now is kind of load recent emails and give me the to, from, and subject line from those emails. But the really cool part about this is how little code it takes to make it run. So this is the code that it takes to make it run. There's a grand total of 30 lines in this HTML file, 10 lines that are JavaScript, right? And there's just hardly anything here overall. It was very, very easy to write this. And this is just JavaScript. I've got to figure out how to zoom faster. Control num plus. I don't know what that means. Does anybody know how to zoom in Notepad++ with a keyboard? I don't know how to scroll I don't have a mouse. I could try it here. Sorry. Yeah, it's fine. I'll copy it into a different text editor where I know how to actually zoom. We're actually going to build this in a little bit. The main part that I wanted to show you right now is it's super easy to get this information out of Exchange. Now, one of the reasons that it's so easy to write this particular demo is right now they're supporting basic authentication, which makes the authentication workflow really easy, but that's not as secure as OAuth. And eventually they want to do the same app provisioning that all the rest of Office 365 is doing. At that point in time, it won't be this easy to write that type of demo, but the functionality for reaching out and consuming the emails is going to stay the same. The only thing that's going to get more complicated is authentication. Okay, and then let's talk about the rest of Microsoft. So there are many, many other OData services inside of Microsoft. Project Server exposes OData. Dynamics CRM exposes OData. Azure Active Directory exposes OData. Azure Table Storage exposes OData. PowerShell both exposes and consumes OData, right? You can point to any PowerShell commandlet and create an OData feed out of that PowerShell commandlet, which is super cool, right? And does Active Directory? Azure Active Directory does. I don't think so. I don't know for sure. We should find somebody who does know. So the question was whether on-prem Active Directory supports OData natively. The answer is I don't know. I don't think so, though. And then similarly, on the client side with PowerShell, you can point to an existing OData service and it will generate PowerShell commandlets for you. So if you've got an OData service and you point PowerShell at it, and you say, hey, I want to be able to do CRUD against a product, it will create a new hyphen product commandlet. It will create an update hyphen product commandlet, a delete hyphen product commandlet. So that's all about kind of getting data out of Microsoft products. But what about getting data in and actually making modifications? So let's talk about Excel. With Excel, there's actually two ways to get OData into Excel. So if you don't have Power BI and you don't have Power Query and you don't like Power Query for some unknown reason, I haven't met anybody who doesn't like Power Query yet, but let's assume for a moment that you need to get OData into Excel some other way. Actually, on the Data tab, you have to have someplace that's not already connected. On the Data tab, you can also do From Other Data Sources and choose From OData Data Feed. This is actually an entirely distinct component from Power Query. It doesn't come with any of the advantages that Power Query does, so you can't mash things up. You just got to point to it in Power Query. But this was the functionality that was there originally. Power Query is really designed to replace this functionality as well as kind of the rest of the get data experience inside of Excel. But that said, if you go in here, you can supply any OData URL. So we'll do https://services.odata.org/northwind/northwind.svc/customers. And it will handle authentication for you against a number of things, including OAuth. I can just check the box for customers. And I can choose to bring those customers in. So Power Query is better in many respects, but this will get the data into Excel for you if you need to get it in there and you don't have Power Query. Power Query itself, we've talked about it quite a bit. One of the coolest things that I like about it is that the ingest process overall is really repeatable. So you build that list of steps, and just in case that wasn't entirely clear before, let's go take a look at that again. But you build this list of steps, and the steps are what are repeatable. So you can share that workbook over to somebody else, and they can run that list of steps. And if they don't have access to the data source, then they can't access, they can't update the thing. So if we jump back over to one of the Power Query tabs. So we were building this list of steps here. We can go in and we can tweak any of the existing settings. We can reorder the steps if we want to. So I can say, hey, the sort should happen after filtering. I can do all sorts of different stuff, right? But again, it's a repeatable process. And it has really good OData support, right? So the other OData functionality that I showed you in Excel, it only supports the XML form of OData, which, as we said, is much larger on the wire. This means that your OData import is going to run a lot faster inside of Power Query. We've covered this demo already. Let's talk about Exchange. So this one's going to be an interesting demo. We'll actually do this demo entirely in Fiddler. How many people have used Fiddler in any real respect? Okay, wow, good. Wow, goodness gracious. It's impressive. Pressure's on now. All right, so let me explain the demo first before we try to do it. So what we're going to try to do is create an email, save it to our drafts folder, and then send that email, and then forward a separate email. So kind of four steps overall. We're going to create the email and save it to our drafts folder. We're going to send that email, and then maybe it was three steps overall, and then forward a different email. So here we go. I'm going to cheat. I've got a lot of the requests built already, which you don't want to sit here and watch me build the requests, but we can talk about them. Scratchpad. Does this do Control-Shift-Plus? All right, let's go find something that does do Control-Shift-Plus. Well, That doesn't do it either, but at least I know how to change the font size here. View font 18. Can people read that? Okay, good. All right, so this is the first request that we're going to run. To create anything new inside of an OData service, you use the post HTTP verb, or method, depending on what you want to call it. You give it a URL that's a collection, right? So you're creating a new member of that collection. You tell it what it is that you're serializing the body of the payload in that you're creating. So this content type means, hey, what I'm giving you is JSON. The accept header, of course, is what do I want back? Right, so it's a little weird to see both accept and content type on the same payload, but it happens to be the case in this particular example. The host is just something that Fiddler puts on there for you. The content length, interestingly enough, the Exchange service actually doesn't care about content length right now. Probably a bug. But so I'm just leaving it as something that is probably inaccurate. And then authorization. And so then this is the payload of the request. So you can see this is how you actually serialize the request. You're going to create these two recipients, right? And it's an array of different recipients. Any given recipient looks like this. Right? So it's got a name and an address. And then we're going to give it a subject. And we're going to give it a body. Straightforward. So let's go run that request. Fiddler. I'm going to stop my capture and clear this, just so it's clearer what we're doing. That guy just had demo success. Execute. Oh, my cookie may have expired. We may have to go get a new cookie. Wait for it. Let's just refresh this and see what happens. Okay, well, I guess it did create it. Okay. So the 201 means, hey, I've successfully created this thing. Let me turn my capture back off. And so we can go look at my drafts folder, hopefully. Outlook.com/Microsoft.com. Loading. And so there's several different folders inside here. So Exchange's URLs are really kind of cool. So everything kind of starts with a me. And then from me, you can go to drafts, or you can go to inbox, or you can go to calendar, or you can go any one of a number of other places. I'm getting redirected all over the place. And then if you're in an email folder, then those things will have a messages navigation property that you can go look at all the different messages in there. And of course, you can use all the normal OData goodness. So you can filter down your messages. You can order them by date. You can order them by person. You can expand things. You can do all sorts of stuff. Maybe we should just look at this in my thick client. Okay, here's my draft. We will make it go away now. I'm not really sure. Maybe Fiddler's messing with the thin client. All right, so next step, let's go back over to Notepad. Next step is we actually got to go get that message back, right? So now what we need to do is actually send the message. So we need the ID that was created for the message itself. And so what we're going to do is we're going to say, hey, go find, oops, we're not looking at the right thing, I don't think. Oh, this is not right. That should have been drafts. I'll have to change it in Fiddler as well. But we're saying go look at drafts, order them by date time created descending, and make sure that it has the right I guess I probably should have put the filter in there for the subject, but I said just kind of bring back the conversation ID and the subject so I can verify it, and then bring back the top two, right? Like, we don't need more than that. We just need a most recent one. So I'm going to modify this to be drafts, and we'll run this request. Slow demos today. And the payload that we should get back should be an array of messages. Weird. Doesn't show the payload there. Should be an array of messages. In this particular case, we only got back one, in spite of the fact that I asked for two, because there was only one match. Right? So what I really want here is the ID. I'm going to grab that. We're actually going to send this. And obviously, you would try to automate this a little bit better than what I'm doing here. So to send something, we're going to invoke a function, an action, rather. So to invoke an action, you use the post verb. We're going to go identify the message that we want to invoke an action on. Right, so we're going to say, here's the messages collection, here's the key for the message, which is what we just grabbed. And then the action that we want to invoke is just send. Right? So it's just slash send at the end there. And Fiddler, back to the query browser. I'm going to update the ID here so that I get the right message. That was the right message. It looks the same. So we'll try sending this. Oh, no. Not the right ID. Copy. Let me try this one more time here. All right. It's hard to read the URL because the key is so long. Try that one more time. Okay, sent this time. I must have copied and pasted wrong. We can go look at this, and it will update in a second, and we'll get a notification that we've received a new email. Maybe just speed it up a little bit. And meanwhile, let's go look at the last step. The last step that we want to do is we want to actually go out and forward an email. So we're going to look for a message that's in the inbox, and I've picked up a particular ID here. And all we're going to do is we're going to call slash forward on that. This is another action. And if you're going to forward it, you've got to tell it some stuff, right? Like, you've got to tell it what you want in the message, and then you've got to tell it who you're forwarding it to. If you were doing something like reply all, then you only need to supply the message that you want to add to it. But in this particular case, we need to supply the recipients that are going to receive this, as well as kind of what the body is. And so we're going to go invoke this. Fiddler. Execute. Okay, and that has forwarded as well, and hopefully this is going to sync up at some point in time. We'll see. Send receive error.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's just the SharePoint list. Well, we'll give that another minute or two to send. Let's see if that's any more update. So we'll come back to that in just a minute and see if it has updated. I promise I won't do any demo magic. If it fails, it fails. Sorry? No. So, in fact, the next demo that we have, right, is just straight JavaScript, right? But literally, most OData is just HTTP, right? It's a bunch of conventions put together. And so Fiddler happens to be a handy tool for screwing around with OData. But it's just a tool, right? And the reason that it's a good tool is because it makes it reasonably easy to do HTTP stuff. Does that make sense? Okay. So just building kind of a plain old JavaScript Exchange client, we looked at this client earlier, but let's look at how we actually need to build this thing, and then hopefully at some point in time my inbox will sync up and we'll be able to do stuff. So I'm going to step you through kind of the process of building this. All right, so when we first started out, like we had a very, very basic web page here that has kind of three static pieces of data. And it has a grid, right? Like, I was just trying to prove that I could bind data to the grid and make it show up nicely. The code for that, I wonder if this is more legible. No, it's not, but we'll do copy and paste. So the code for that is pretty much what we had before, right? So the vast majority of this is just a template, right? So HTML all the way down to here, right? And then this is the interesting piece of the JavaScript. So all I said is, hey, look, eventually I'm going to get back something that looks a little bit like this in JSON. So let's start from this, and then we'll work on it and make it OData-y. And then we're just going to use a simple little method from jQuery, and we're going to iterate over what we're getting back in the payload, and we're going to create rows that are going to be pushed into that particular table. So really, really straightforward code. So we take these three static customers and push them into the table. And you can see that, no big surprise, it works. So the next step is, to convert it to use OData. So all we did here is we got rid of the static data, right? Our file is even shorter now. And we replaced it with this call to jQuery's getJSON. And so the two arguments to getJSON are, number one, a URL, and number two, a success callback, right? So this is the URL that we're querying, so we're going to go out and ask the Northwind service for its top 15 customers. Then we're going to say for each customer that we get back, right, for each customer that we get back, we want to create a table row. Right? Again, like this is just super, super simple JavaScript. Right? I am far from an expert in JavaScript, and I was able to write this in a few minutes. So now what we get So it goes out to the Northwind service, requests the top 15 customers, and posts them back there. And just to kind of prove that that's the case, what we can do is change the query. So we can say, and $filter equals company name greater than I don't know what it does with the spaces. So company name is greater than M. We'll save that. We'll refresh. And now our company name should all start with N or higher. Hopefully. Received a response. Uh-oh, it didn't like the query. The response was not a good response. 400 bad requests. Did I screw something up in the query? Nothing like debugging during a live demo. Let's try not doing the percent 20s. Let's see if it'll just be nice to us. Oh. Sorry, I know what I did. Strings need to be delimited by single quotes. So I apologize. That was what the problem was. Okay, let's try that one more time. Better. Okay, so now all of our company names start with M or greater. All right, and then the last step, so let's just kind of look at the diff between those. Right. So literally all we did was we removed the static stuff, and we just did the call to get JSON. Right. And so now git checkout step 3. Last but not least, that worked. Git checkout. Oh boy. Discard changes. Discard my changes. Let's try that one more time. Okay. Git checkout. Step 3. All right. Okay, and so now all we've done here is we've changed our method call, and here, we'll just move it over. To be to the Office endpoint, right? So HTTPS, Outlook, office365.com/EWS/OData, right? This is in production. This is my actual email box. So get me the top 15 messages. Again, I could do the standard OData stuff and filter it or order it if I wanted to. And then I'm just kind of pulling the data out. And that's kind of where we wound up at the last point. So if we refresh again, then we're kind of back to the original, except that my Outlook 365 is not playing nice for some reason. Oh, finally. Let's see if the other stuff is updated. Oh, good. So it's out of my drafts, right? The message has disappeared finally. And hopefully, in my inbox, I've got two new emails, which we now have to find. Okay, so here's the one that we sent originally, and then here's the other one that we forwarded. All right, so took some time, but we got there. Thank you. All right, and I did have one other demo that I was going to do, but with Power Query, like, you can combine anything and everything, right? Like, you can take data sources from all over the place, and you can merge them together and join them and do all sorts of really, really interesting things. I think there's a ton of room to be really creative here. One of the things that I've done in the past, actually, is I found a text file online that had airport coordinates, right? So lat long of airports. And I also found some data in Wikipedia that I wanted to be able to access. And so I built this Power Query where I was pulling 26 different Wikipedia tables and essentially unioning all of them together, and then eventually kind of joining that to this text file that I found online so that I could build a reasonable data set for an OData service that I was building. But it was just a really interesting demo, and it helped me to understand what the real value of Power Query is. So if I can sell you on one thing for Power Query, it's go out and try it, right? Like, just fiddle with it. It's really fun. So recapping, why is Microsoft using OData? So this is just the sales pitch again. I'm really trying to drill it in. Standardized format, custom feel. Reduced cost for design and development, which means faster time to market, right? And then broad reach for existing ecosystem. And of course, we covered most of these, but most of the major product families at Microsoft are already using OData. And with that, we've got 5 minutes for any questions. So the service route, okay, so the URL, the question was, from the URL, would you use .svc? The thing that you saw that was .svc is part of the service route. In that particular case, it happened to be the stack that we were using to create the OData service. So that service was created with WCF Data Services, and it just by default appends a .svc to the end of the service route. So it was a stack idiosyncrasy and nothing more. With Web API, you most frequently don't have any sort of a suffix on the OData or on the service route. So you'll have like slash API or something like that. Other questions?
With the Power BI, what's the good
is reporting? With Power BI, what good is reporting services? Oh, I'm not qualified to answer that question. But I mean, there's a variety of things that are still very cool about reporting services. So one of the things that that Power BI may not have right now is kind of a notification type service. So with SSRS, you could schedule it to send you an email every so often. And if that's not supported in Power BI right now, I'm sure that it's on the backlog somewhere, right? It's a better question for somebody other than me. Other questions? Yeah, so, okay, so the question is, do you need to do anything special with OData URLs? Yes, the query string has to be properly encoded. That has a very specific meaning, but it's the industry standard meaning of URL encoding. So for instance, you have to encode forward slashes, right? Because otherwise, servers would get really confused about what's going on. So there's a whole series of characters, including spaces, which get URL encoded. No, so most browsers will actually handle the URL encoding for you. So I don't know if it was clear in the demo, but actually in the HTML file that we were using for the Exchange demo, in step two, or step one, when we were filtering from Northwind, I guess step two, I actually put spaces into it, right? But because the browser knows what to do with that and how to URL encode, it worked fine. It's just that by the time it gets to the server, it can't have spaces in it, right? The server will throw. Yeah? No, I'm saying they allow basic authentication right now. I wouldn't know about that. So what I can say is they certainly support OAuth right now. It's just that they happen to also support basic authentication, which makes the demo, like, you remove all the authentication confusion from the demo. And don't get me wrong, like, authentication is so important. It's just that it's a different issue, right? Like, I wasn't trying to talk about authentication today. In fact, the OData protocol doesn't say anything at all about authentication and authorization, right? Because we feel that that's a separate concern. If you want to do Windows Auth, great, right? If you want to do basic auth, fine. Make sure you SSL encrypt your connection. If you want to do something else, okay, right? But those are all your prerogative, and you should choose that separately from OData. Yes? Well, of course, the normal types of operators like greater than, less than, that type of thing. What are you thinking of specifically? Yeah, so you can absolutely do greater than and less than. You can also create custom query operators, right? So you can do, if something doesn't exist for you, you can do it yourself. There's a special way to do it in OData. You don't prefix your custom query operator with dollar sign. That's the one rule. But yeah, you absolutely could introduce that. Yes? What would you need, or why would you? Well, okay, so it depends on which question you're asking. So I think the question at a high level is, why would you need to create an OData service? So hopefully you're not creating your own stack. Hopefully you're using either WCF data services or web API or something else to create the OData service, because they're going to just take so much pain out of your life. But that said, if you've got custom data sources, so you've got text files sitting somewhere that have valuable corporate data in them, or you have a finance crew that does all their work in Excel spreadsheets that are stored in SharePoint, and you want a really easy way to take all those Excel spreadsheets and make them available to other things like Power Query, well, put an OData head over them, right? And now you can filter all that data and so on and so forth, right? So there's many reasons to create an OData service, but the primary reason is you want to use that data from somewhere that you would call it from an API.
Is that something that needs to be done?
Yeah. Both of the two stacks that I mentioned. So Web API is kind of the flagship stack right now. It's very, very easy to create a number of OData services. WCF Data Services was kind of the original stack that we started with. It's 15 lines of code to create an OData service over a database. It's crazy easy. I mean, to do something over an Excel spreadsheet, it'd be a little bit more complicated, but not very complicated. Anything else? Yes? Does Exchange's API? Yeah. Okay. Yep. So the question is, like, what do you do about attachments and presumably other binary stuff, right? So the OData protocol has a number of primitive types. One of those primitive types happens to be binary. There also happens to be stream. And you can have these things called name streams and something special called media link entities, which, like, is a whole other topic. But the short answer is there are several ways to model that sort of concept. Exchange has settled on one particular way. They chose, I believe, either the binary or stream property, but there are other ways to approach it as well. It's just like the OData protocol has a little bit of flexibility, but it certainly supports that scenario. So with SharePoint's specific implementation, so the question was, let me recap to make sure that I got the question right. So with SharePoint's WCF Data Services hosted OData endpoint, can you fold in a custom SQL query? No. The reason is because they're not transforming to SQL. They're transforming to, help me out here, what's the SharePoint query language? Gosh darn it, I'm drawing a blank. The special query language that they use. Yes, thank you, CAML. Yes. So they're actually transforming from OData query to CAML rather than OData query to SQL. So anything that you can do in CAML, you should be able to do through their OData service. Now they are working on updating things. I don't know where they might go from here, but we talk to them all the time. And hopefully they're headed for OData V4. Okay, so I guess I should rephrase that. So anything that you can do in both CAML and OData, you should be able to do through the SharePoint OData service. Yeah. Okay, I think we're out of time. If you have other questions, please feel free to come up and holler at me. Thank you.